Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction's 694 Science Faction. Get over it, Brian Dunning. The Polynesians got here before you.
How many emails does he send you a week, a month, a year? Because he hasn't gotten over this, because he's still blowing up your text.
We're going to get into this. Those guys have listened for a while can look back to, I believe it's...
Thank you for being professional, not letting it letting it fly. Because but maybe we could dish for the Patreons, like girl talk.
Go back and look. I believe it's 663, Science Faction 663. We talked about the evidence of Polynesian settlement in the Americas. We're going to get into it because there's a brand new article. Brings up even more evidence for Polynesian settlement of the Americas, even though we didn't need it because it was pretty solid evidence before. But we're going to get into that. We're going to get into the whole backstory of that. Very, very interesting stuff. But for now, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, the not-at-all Polynesian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
I am not Polynesian. That probably would have helped. When I was a kid, I was raised in a very athletic family, and love was given if you were good at sports. Like my house got really, like home life got a lot better when I started like doing really good at football.
Right.
At a certain point,
that's how it should be.
I realized, you know, I just don't have the frame or the ability to play D1, and I just wish, like, damn it, why couldn't my mom have slept with a Polynesian man? Then my chances of getting into the NFL, which was my dream at that point,
sure,
just went up like 45-fold.
Yeah, and now your dream is just to go to an NFL game as a spectator, which, I mean, I've been telling you, this is an achievable dream.
They're pretty expensive. It is my dream to one day have enough casual spending money that I would spend it on going to an NFL game. Actually, I wouldn't do that because I'm a San Diegan and fuck.
Yes.
And I have self-respect.
You have to travel. Yeah, that's right. Yes. No, that's true. And we talked about this one time a long, long time ago, but I remember looking up the stats on this because I remember I was not a big football fan growing up, but then I started watching when I was in college, and I remember looking around being like, man, there's certainly a lot of Polynesian last names in this game. There's like a lot of them, right? And I was like, but they make up such a small percentage of the overall. How could you have this many Polynesians in this one professional sport? That seems weird. And so I was like, well, obviously, you know, just genetically, they're
bigger
people.
Well, the NFL's only been in Japan for a few years. Give it time and we'll start seeing Yamamoto.
Right. Yeah. So, or like Congo pygmies or something. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they make great running backs. You never know. But I remember thinking that as like, well, you know, maybe obviously they're bigger people. So that plays a role. And there's a culture in places like American Samoa of football. And that plays a big role too. But like, I wonder what it is. Like, I wonder if you are a Polynesian, are your chances twice as good at getting in the NFL, or like, you know, 2.5 times? Like, that'd be a big difference. If you were 2.5 times likely to get in the NFL, that is a gigantic difference. And then, Damian, we've talked about this. Do you remember what your chances are if you are Polynesian of getting into the NFL? How much bigger your chances are than if you are a non-Polynesian?
Well, I believe we specifically had said Samoan, but I believe it was 45. It was like something outrageous. It was like 45.
It was 40. 40 times, yes. Yes, 40 times, which is like, I think that's like the chances of you getting into the NFL as an adult versus a child. Like, I don't know what it is. 40 times is insane.
Yeah. When you're born with a 300-pound bench, like the sky's the limit as far as like anything where you're competing with mortals in athletic endeavors.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess it doesn't seem represented in other sports that I don't know, but it is.
Well, the NFL legitimately like has scouts for like and like has set up like camps and everything. So like there is like kind of, you know, kind of like in the way that USA leads in women's soccer, because we really have like our institutions funnel kids from a young age through these things. I think the NFL has seen where the bread is buttered and they've set up their own camps.
Yeah, like I don't see like the Samoan dominance in Hialeah that you would expect, but you know, I guess.
It is in rugby. Apparently, like whenever you see like a dude just running over jacked Australians, it's always like some huge Samoan guy or a Maori man or something.
Makes sense, makes sense. And if you want to hear more witty Samoan banter, go ahead and check out our Patreon. You can search Robert Timothy on Patreon for 4 extra science articles every single week. This week, we're doing something a little different. We're going to talk about some of the ins and outs of archaeology for a couple of reasons. But if you're interested in that, go sign up to our Patreon.
That's right. For a Polynesian perspective, you heard it here. Bobby, you're going to have to scramble like to hire like somebody named like Papa Lulu and the pig or something, like a Hawaiian DJ who's going to like do science trivia.
I work with a guy who's Polynesian and his name is Jeff. So you guys will hear from Jeff the Polynesian.
Yeah, I guess that was pretty racist of me.
Yeah, it was super racist.
And for more of that type of humor, check out Awful Neutral. It is a comedy science podcast. No, it is. Awful Neutral is a Dungeons and Dragons live play. I'm sorry, I'm in the script. I'm in the plug mode. This is when I plug this show, which I do regularly on site, despite the disrespect. Anyhow, check out Awful Neutral. It is a live play Dungeons and Dragons podcast where some of the funniest people I know play Dungeons and Dragons. We live stream every episode at Sunday at noon Pacific time. Check us out, or listen to us as a podcast. Oh, or I'm even downloading all the old episodes onto YouTube, so check it out.
Yeah, and sorry we've been messing episodes here and there. That's my bad. I have been just absolutely slammed with work in a way that makes it just impossible. I'm not only slammed, I'm slammed and like in the middle of nowhere, beautiful, beautiful nowhere, like in the middle of these gorgeous mountains that nobody has been on for 100 years and nobody's going to be on for a couple hundred years after this. So it's a great like treat to be able to go do it. But just climbing mountains through thick, thorny brush near to the point of death and then coming well out of cell phone range and then getting home at like 9 p.m. at night. So that has been my life for the past 2 weeks or so. And our taping and publishing schedule has slowed down. So my apologies, that is slowly coming to an end. So I hope to get back to putting out 2 episodes a week as usual.
I gotta say, for our Patreons, or if you're thinking about supporting the show, just keep in mind, Bobby is a father of 2. He is a very good father. A very involved father. He also works these crazy hours. He is a very good husband as well. I'm sure he volunteers and other such things. But he manages to spend time not only recording this episode, but spending countless hours editing every week. And his wife has yet to strike him with the frying pan. So you know he's doing something right. Support us on Patreon.
Yes, or doing something wrong, because that's actually her kink, and I'm apparently not turning her on. So thanks for bringing it up, Damien. Really, really bit to the bone on that one. And we'll get right on with science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
What if, like, if one day, fans, Bobby has to record and he's like wearing sunglasses and I'm like, what's wrong, Bobby? It's nothing. And then yeah. He fumbles because he's like, he fumbles his coffee and his glasses fall off. And like, I find out that he's been the victim of domestic violence because you guys have not contributed enough to our Patreon.
Wait, I thought we just established it was a good thing. It was because she was super turned on. That's why I got hit in the head with the frying pan.
Listen, your wife's a complex woman. Okay. Truth be told, there probably was some other things that were grinding your gears. And this is just the thing that's snapped.
Oh, dear. So, article number 1. Are we there yet? Polynesian acceptance.
This is where Dunning's eating his words, right?
Well, this is on the tail of a big episode we did way back when, all the way back like 30 episodes ago, Science Faction 663. And that was in response to something I had been listening to a podcast, which I listen to a lot, called Skeptoid. I highly advise you guys check it out. It's done by a guy named Brian Dunning. Puts out a great podcast, and he takes a skeptical look at topics, and debunks a lot of pseudoscience. It's something right after my heart. Somebody who's been around for a long time doing this, and I've listened to most, if not all, of those episodes. Love him. Love the show. He was addressing a different topic and casually said something, almost an offhanded comment during one of his episodes where he said, the Polynesians never made it to South America in pre-contact times. And me, being not only an archaeologist, but somebody who does this show, was like, whoa, 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 he must have been mistaken. He just doesn't know all of the recent research that we have that proves that indeed the Polynesians did hit South America. And we've had some pretty solid evidence for about 15 to 20 years, and we have definitive evidence as of 2020 with a big genetic study that we covered here. And so I wrote him a somewhat lengthy email kind of outlining all this and sent it to him. It was, while lengthy, I listed a couple of things. It wasn't going in deep into depth. And I got a response from him, very cordial, saying like, you know, I wish I hadn't have made that statement. It looks like there's science on both sides and it's not really a settled thing. So I'm not going to correct it in corrections. And out of all due, with all due respect to him, there just isn't science on both sides. This is now pretty much a definitive thing. We can say that some number of Polynesians made it to the west coast of South America, or maybe some, you know, southern Central America, at some point about 1,000 years ago, and it happened at least once, and they brought Amerindians back with them to the eastern Polynesian islands that included, you know, the Marquesas and Rapa Nui, also known as Easter Island, and we know that for sure. And really briefly, because you guys can always go back and look at 663, I'll kind of go over some of the evidence we talked about back then. The evidence being that there is, I mean, a big one is the spread of the sweet potato, which is an Andean crop from South America, through the Polynesian islands prior to European contact. That's a pretty good one. And the argument against it has always been, at first they were like, well, maybe it came with Captain Cook later on. We now know from archaeological sites, we have sweet potatoes definitely in Polynesian islands prior to European contact. So then they go, okay, well, you know, it's a root crop. It could have just floated over on a mat of grass or something. And that's not super likely, but it's possible. It's like totally possible. We covered that in 663. The problem with that is the Polynesian word for sweet potato is like kumar, and the God damn it. And the Quechua word, at least the word that was used prevalently in the times in Ecuador, in the place where we think the contact happened, or around there in the 1500s, that word was kumara. And so it's like, okay, you've got the crop and the word, bro. I don't think it floated over and you just named it the same. As we pointed out in that episode, I was like, I'll only buy this argument if you find an uncontacted tribe, you hand them, that's never seen a sweet potato or a European or a Polynesian or an Andean or anybody before, you hand them a sweet potato, they take a bite out of it, and they go, kumara! And it's like, all right, that's just the sound people make when they first taste a sweet potato. Then I get it. Otherwise, there was fucking
contact.
That's
what I wanted
there.
To ask you. Does convergent evolution apply to linguistics? Now, we do know that mother, right. Mom, like that's there's similarities there.
Sure.
Why not the sweet potato? I was going to make a joke about it, but you actually described the scenario I was going to describe in jest.
You actually made that joke in 663.
Oh my god.
There's more anecdotal evidence of things like turmeric coming from Southeast Asia and being grown in parts of Western South America by the time that white people had gotten there. It had already been ingrained into their culture and used as a dye and all this kind of stuff. So it had been there. Bottle gourd making its way from the Americas to Polynesia. I will put that one in the, like, well, that one's more likely to have floated things because that's what bottle gourds do. They do float. So that could have floated over. There is the word for axe in a certain dialect of Southern Chileans that
to ask a question, to deliver a question. Yes.
Is the same as the one that's in the Polynesian languages there. Also, their word for boat, which all of a sudden appears as a different type of boat around that time, about 1,000 years ago, as kind of a sewn plank canoe, as opposed to the typical boats that were built at that point. Their word for that type of boat, which is separate from the boats that they used before and is gone by a separate name, is the same name as Polynesians use for their boats. So there is some linguistic evidence. There's those evidence. The ones that really are the nail in the coffins are the sweet potato with spreading through Polynesia with the Quechua name for sweet potato, pre-Columbian. The second thing is the chicken, which is Southeast Asian domesticate, spreading into South America. And we now, there's a bunch of sites that seem to date before, you know, contact in like the early 1400s, maybe 1300s or something. But there's like one or two sites, El Arreal, I think, who that absolutely do. They are 100% pre-Columbian, pre-contact, though, there we have chicken bones in South America. Like, unless you're claiming a fucking chicken floated over, your argument is done at that point. It's done. It's over. But then in 2020, we really had the big you know, nail in the coffin, and that was a genetic study that showed about 1,000 years ago there was an infusion of Amerindian or Native South American DNA into the natives of Eastern Polynesia, the Polynesians that were there, and it's most closely related to what is now the Xenu people of Colombia. So, you know, that might be the area they landed. They might have landed someplace else, and that's just the remnant group that's most closely related. But regardless, there is DNA, South American DNA in Polynesians. So you could make the argument that maybe the South Americans made it to Easter Island. Again, it's like 2,000 miles off the coast. Very unlikely. They didn't have ocean-going technology. And then you'd have to explain how they then took the chickens back to where they were. And that doesn't make a lot of sense. Really, it seems like these Polynesians who were already exploring this massive Pacific Ocean, finding these tiny islands in the middle of nowhere, undoubtedly just at some point made landfall on the continent, grabbed some people from there and headed back, or mated with some people there and headed back with their kids. Whatever it was, there was some genetic infusion into the eastern groups of Polynesia. This is undisputed. This is like solid evidence. It's done. Polynesians made it to South America. That's all there is. By the way, there were some things in there that I actually missed in that 663 episode. The biggest was, and I should have covered this, there is actually a place in Panama where coconuts, which are domesticates, these particular coconuts are domesticates from Southeast Asia. There's like coconut trees that are grown there, and they were grown there prior to European contact. And these particular coconuts have been genetically linked from a mid-2000s article to a specific part of the Philippines, really, really far away. There's a bunch of coconut trees in the middle. If you're going to say it floated and then suddenly sprang up, which by the way is unlikely, way less likely than you think, if that were to happen, it would have almost certainly been from a closer coconut tree. And the specific breed of coconut, the specific species of coconut that this is, just so happens to be one that actually doesn't float very well and certainly would not have floated across the entire fucking Pacific
Ocean.
So rolled
along the bottom?
That's right. Yes. It was like It Follows, but for coconuts. We have now just multiple definitive lines of evidence that the Polynesians came in. And guess what? As of this week, we have one more line of evidence, because we have tools on Rapa Nui, Easter Island, obsidian tools that happen to have the remains of New World starch fruits on them. So this is looking at obsidian blades. So again, that's the volcanic glass that's frequently used to make stone tools everywhere in the world, because it's incredibly easy. You can just shatter a piece of obsidian, you automatically get sharp tools. The downside of that is they're not super long lasting because they can break so easily, as opposed to metavolcanics and stuff that can hold their edge much longer, but they're harder to create that edge in the first place. So they found a series of 20 obsidian blades excavated from some of the earlier levels of occupation of Rapa Nui from about 1,000 to 1,300 AD. And on those blades, they found some of the old world fruits that were common to the Polynesians, including breadfruit, cassava, taro, purple yam, a Tahitian apple, etc.
Spam.
Spam, that's right.
In the Samoan school system, it's actually considered a vegetable.
However, they found akira, sweet potato, and cassava, all of which are South American crops, and those were all on those blades from 1000 to 1300 AD, once again showing some form of contact between Polynesians and the Amerindians of South and Central America. Very, very cool. Now, there might be some issues with, like, maybe this protein is replicated in other things. It's like, oh, yeah, but was the protein for all three of these replicated in some old world food that we don't know of? That's very unlikely. Realistically, this is just another one of those many, many evidences of Polynesian contact with South America. Again, this isn't even the best. The genetic evidence, that's airtight. Like, we have genetic evidence of a genetic infusion of Amerindian DNA into the Polynesians of Easter Island and those places and Marquesas and stuff about 1,000 years ago. We have the sweet potato. We have all of this stuff. But this is pretty good evidence, too. We have the protein remains of certain starches that come from South America, and it's sitting in 1,000 to 1,300 AD sediments in Polynesia. Like, what's the argument going to be?
I love the idea of one of our fans listening to this episode and like saying, oh, I'm going to go on some chat message boards. I'm going to go online. I'm going to email this to Brian Dunning. I'm going to make sure, because let's be realistic. I don't think he's an avid listener.
No, I don't think so.
But, you know, bring this to his attention. And he starts listens to everything you just said, all the rebuttals of points, all the finely listed rebuttals to his dismissal of your previous email, and also sees that you have a platform Clearly, that has contacted him that just noted that he just attempted to dismiss you and would not print a retraction. And I laugh thinking of just how much he hated every second that I talked. Like how much every second, every joke I made, every time I interjected, I stopped the flow of information to demand attention, how much he fucking hated it. And I smile.
I mean, I hope he does listen to this. I hope in typical Skeptoid fashion, he listens to this and episode 663. Maybe we'll put the link in the description on this as well. So you can go back and listen to that, where I talk about some of the refutations of the genetic evidence. There's really only one I found in the literature, and it's kind of a BS one. So like, there really is no scientific refutation of this. I hope he hears all that and goes like, oh yeah, I better do a recall on this. I better do a correction on one of my episodes. Because he does do corrections episodes. I actually contacted him based to do a corrections for this, which he, you know, his email said he wasn't going to do because of those reasons. I hope he hears that and changes his mind. I think he said, you know, it's not important and it was a throwaway line and stuff. But it's like, this actually is important. And to me, as I pointed out in that previous episode, 663, this is one of the most interesting stories of humankind, of our shared human history, is this mass migration of people from this one place in Taiwan that spread out and dominated almost the entire globe. I mean, you're talking about Polynesian settlements from Madagascar. Again, Madagascar being a fucking Polynesian settlement right off the coast of Africa. Madagascar through parts of the Indian Islands, all the way through, you know, the parts of Philippines and Indonesian islands. New Zealand, huge one that turns out was settled from the east and not the west at all. So settled from far off places, then up through Samoa and Tonga and Hawaii and Rapa Nui, just like absolute little specks in the middle of the ocean, and now we know all the way to South America. You're talking about a single culture that was able to dominate the entire world using this weird suite of technology that nobody else replicated, nobody else was able to do, no other cultures were able to do this. This is like a very amazing and unique story of human colonization that occupied the fucking globe, like basically everything outside of the Atlantic. And it's just amazing. And like, it may have been a throwaway line to him, but the story itself is really important and really special. And it shows like an absolutely extraordinary civilization that was able to do amazing things. Again, in fucking outrigger canoes, they're dominating the entire ocean, the largest body of water in our solar system. It's to me, it's incredibly interesting, but also it's important just to be correct. It's important to be correct in what you say. And if you have a line, throwaway or not, that says these people didn't do something that they did, and the fact that they did it is so amazing and so impressive and so wonderful in a world where pseudoscience makes those type of big claims erroneously, when things like that are known, we should celebrate them. We should say, look at this. Like I don't know, to me, this is more interesting than all like the fake giants stories they have on like pseudo-archaeology sites. This is real and it's fucking interesting.
You know, I've listened to many, many Skeptoid episodes, and he has retractions for like small bullshit he says, and he'll like say regularly, right, oh, this was just a small line, but it was wrong, blah, in his deep voice. Yeah. And so for him to put up a stink about this, where you are a scientist in the field, you know, just for to dismiss it out of hand, I would say maybe look inward, Brian Dunning. What else needs to be questioned? What other? I'm like looking at you, and I'm like, okay, now what other bullshit's coming out of his mouth now that he's dismissed an expert in the field on?
Yeah, well, I hope he does do that retraction, and you know, more power to him. Again, I still listen to the show, still enjoy it. I hope he can hear that and take it as it is. On to article number two. A new paper suggests that chocolate was spreading through the Americas 5,000 years ago.
You'll notice a distinct uptick in thickness in the Americas about the time it was started hitting just thicker behinds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is interesting. So chocolate, for a while, we weren't sure 100% where it was domesticated. We thought it might have actually been domesticated in multiple places and then, you know, like moved and bred together. We now think it was probably in northern South America, somewhere between like Peru, Ecuador, that kind of thing. By the way, it's not a coincidence we're talking about this at the same time as the Polynesian story. I thought they went well together. And it spread really, really quickly once it was domesticated. And this is really interesting because we think it was only domesticated, you know, 5,000 to 6,000 years ago. And this particular study looks at close to 400 ceramic pieces from 19 different pre-Columbian cultures at a huge, huge span of time from 5900 BP to 400 BP, basically from Central America down to, again, Northern South America. And they looked for the presence of the proteins that mark cacao. They were able to find it basically like right after its domestication. So we used to think it wasn't even domesticated until like 5,000 years ago. New evidence suggests a little bit later. They were finding it, evidence of chocolate or cacao on ceramics, basically up and down the Pacific coast as long as 5,000 years ago. Like it just suddenly like jumped out. And it kind of makes sense because if you think about what was happening, if you, again, this is pre-sugar and stuff like that, that, that comes from the old world. This is coming from a place that doesn't have the sweeteners, but this would be a very unique taste. It was originally bred, we thought, not even for the beans that we currently use to make the chocolate, but the beans come in like a larger fruit. Like a, the fruit that chocolate beans come from is like a foot long. And
the more of them you eat, the more of them you too. It's a little misplaced. You were talking. I didn't want to interrupt, but...
Well, you did have something important to say, so I forgive you.
Listen, if Brian Dunning was still hanging around, he had to hate. He had to grimace.
They would actually grow it for like the milky stuff that was in the fruit in between the seeds, which they could not only drink, it was a source of fats and stuff like that, but also could be easily fermented to make an alcoholic beverage. So like some of the early alcohols that were running around at that time, as including things like chicha beer and stuff, were alongside things like this chocolate beer, you could call it, even though I don't think it would taste like chocolate. Again, it's the milk in between the nuts, but like it was originally used to domesticate it, not necessarily for the seeds that we now utilize the plant for, but for the milky substance that was in between the seeds and all the stuff you could do with it, whether it was just an easy source of decent fats that you could store and easily take around, or you could actually get wasted off of it.
It was truly the magical fruit. And I don't mean that. I'm not going to finish it. Even though it's going to cause me pain to not.
Since we don't use that part for like the chocolate production now, there has to be a lot of extra stuff. And I feel like this is prime territory for some hipster to come in and start a new like chocolate beer fad. Like, especially we come from San Diego. We come from like the land of microbrews. And if you were to suddenly have all this excess waste out of the back of the Nestle factory that wasn't otherwise being used for something else, and you could turn it into an alcoholic beverage, I feel like there would be a half a dozen breweries within a mile of where we live in like a year's time.
It just tells you how truly terrible that alcoholic beverage is, and like there's just no market for it. It's the black licorice of alcohol. And I think if anything, what the Nestle does is they just grind up all that excess chocolate plant parts, mm-hmm. and they just feed it to their slave army of slave laborers, child slave laborers.
Oh, Damien, you don't feed slaves. Like, that's practically paying them. Like, oh, come on.
Of course, you have to set up. They have to earn their freedom. They have to be able to buy it. Mm-hmm. But you charge them for their meals. You charge them for their blankets. Yes. You charge them for their stone bed.
You charge them for using the floor in the factory where they make the chocolates. I mean, listen, if you hadn't put that floor there, they couldn't be making chocolates and earning money.
This camp doesn't, you need guards to run this camp. And these guards, you know, they can't just be just anybody, because these guards will inevitably have to kill a few kids as an example, the few troublemakers, in order to keep the factory running smoothly so that I can have my Reese's Pieces.
I like to think that somewhere like 50 years ago, there was some anthropologist and he was doing research and he came to give a presentation to the Nestle Corporation. He's like, I got a great new deal, fellas. What we're going to do is we're going to sell all this chocolate liquidy stuff. We're going to turn it into a beer and sell it to the masses and they'll love it. And then one of the executives looked at him like he was an idiot. And he was like, you want us to sell this nasty shit to people? You think they're actually going to buy it? This is utter garbage. There's no way somebody's going to buy that. Next thing, you're going to want us to just like take free water and put it in bottles and sell it. And then all the other Nestle guys had the like proverbial light bulb over their head.
So what, I could just buy a Great Lake in America because it's for sale? And then just, I could bottle Lake Huron.
Oh dear. Thank you, audience, for coming back to Science Faction 694, where you learned all about how Polynesians were absolutely in South America 1,000 years ago. and how chocolate spread quickly through the Americas. Thanks so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 695.
Hey, Bobby, I think Brian Dunning got your message. He normally was supposed to have a corrections episode, but here, I'll just play it.
Hello, this is Brian Dunning, and welcome to Skeptoid. This week's episode, has Damien lost every game of I Call BS? Find out with us here on Skeptoid. Doon, 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 doon.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.